Welcome to the archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Do we really know the people around us? Our children, our family, our parents, our friends? Or are we strangers in our own community? Anthropologist Mary Catherine Bateson is the author of Full Circles, Overlapping Lives, Culture and Generation in Transition. She suggests we are strangers, describing us as immigrants in time rather than space. Bateson says we meet strangers not only on the street, but at the breakfast table and in the mirror. She urges that we use this as a training ground for understanding differences in race, class, and generation, to enjoy the multiplicity around us rather than seeking refuge from diversity. Mary Catherine Bateson is the daughter of two distinguished anthropologists, Margaret Mead and Gregory Bateson. This interview from our archives was recorded in April of 2000. Mary Catherine Bateson, welcome to Radio Curious.
Well, thank you.
You talk in your book about the vast difference in our culture because of the changes, what I interpret to be electronic changes and the changes from the industrial age. And you call us immigrants in time as opposed to immigrants in space. Can you explain a little bit more what you mean by that for us?
Well, you know, there have always been huge differences between human cultures that you would encounter if you were all around the globe from country to country as an immigrant in space. But people who stayed where they were born were able to look at parents, think ahead that was the way their life would be, and expect a good deal of continuity. Now, what's happened is that because there are a great many changes, if you stay in one place, the world is changing around you, and that makes you a different kind of immigrant. And this is not just a matter of electronics. It's a matter of the fact that we live longer, so our lives have a different shape, and it's a matter of the convergence of different human groups that have been in different parts of the planet and are also migrating at the same time.
Well, that causes us to have a much more vivid potential for conflict, at the same time a potential for understanding those conflicts. And I think that's what you're trying to do in the book, as I see it.
Well, I'm trying to show people ways that they can use their experience of change very close up to make them more open to understanding people further away.
Can you give some examples?
Well, I open the book with the phrase, "We live with strangers." And what I mean by that is that the people we live with, our children, our parents, our spouses and lovers, are themselves changing, and we have to keep relearning them all the time. This is what it means to live in a society of lifelong learning, where the roles are changing and people are outgrowing obsolete roles. And it creates an opportunity for discovery, discovering more about yourself and more about the other person. Have you ever sat, you know, and watched a little I'll take a first step, and you feel as if maybe it's your child, you know that child, but that child has just stepped into a new world by being able to get up on his feet. And I think we see our friends and relations doing that as they discover new opportunities.
Well, I certainly remember seeing that in relationship to both of my daughters when they took their first step.
Right. You see, children are a really good example because they really are complete strangers when they arrive. And the interesting thing is that though you can't understand them and you can't communicate terribly well and they don't know the customs of the place, you can still love them. You can be deeply committed and be very much committed to learning to know them in their process of becoming.
Is that almost a human nature? Because I find that that's often the case, what you say, with biological children as well as with adopted children.
I think it is pretty deeply human nature, but I think we have to learn to look in the same way at the adults in our lives.
Or the teenagers.
And indeed, the teenagers.
The teenage children who all of a sudden become radical strangers.
And we have to let them grow the way they're growing. I don't think it works to think you can set a stamp on someone growing up. You have to guide them. You have to make information available. But they have to become whom they're going to become.
What do you mean, set a stamp?
Well, in the past, you know, it was possible for a man to say he wanted his son to follow in his footsteps, and he meant very precisely into the same job, with the same skills, in the same place, like a farmer handing on a farm to his son. Now, today, even if his son chooses to be a farmer and to remain in the same place, he has to use so many new techniques and function in such a different market that he has to become a rather different person.
I'd like to you to elaborate that and explain a little bit, but I want to mention that our guest this week is Mary Catherine Bateson, the author of Full Circles and Overlapping Lives. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Those changes that you talk about, they're more than just farming. They're at almost every level. If we look at how the world was changed with fax machines 15 years ago, and how in the past 5 years it's been changed with the internet.
Everything functions differently, and unfortunately, we all feel busier. We're not finding that these wonderful inventions give us a lot of free time.
Do you have some thoughts on that, as to why we are busier when we have the inventions that are supposed to make things easier? Or is that just commercial hype?
Well, I think people are under a lot of pressure. Their standards for what they ought to be able to achieve, what they ought to be able to consume, keep getting ratcheted up, and they don't have a lot of time to sit back and consider what really matters to them, what their deeper priorities are. I think we cheat ourselves out of time for reflection. And even though we're constantly learning new techniques, we don't get the benefit of learning from experience unless we take time to reflect on experience. You know, they say experience is the best teacher, but we're mainly pretty bad students who don't do our homework.
What do you mean? Talk a little more about that.
Well, I mean with the world changing around us, there is a tremendous amount to see. Just walking down the street, there are things to be learned because there are other people on the street who've come from great distances. We've got all sorts of information impinging on us. And I don't mean just electronically. I mean from our eyes and our ears. But we don't necessarily go through the process of reflecting on it and integrating it into our experience.
It seems to me that reflection or the integration is prepared for us and piped into everyone's home through the medium of television. And that takes away from the opportunity to sit quietly and at one different level like we have here on radio. People can form images of what the speakers in our conversation look like based on our voices alone. In television, that image is given to us. In the absence of radio and television, it requires even more conjecture on the part of the thinker.
This is true. But, you know, even though the television pipes an interpretation into your home, that may not be the right interpretation for what's happening inside your home. Sometimes you'll hear a mother say, explain her child's behavior by saying, he's in his terrible twos, but next week he's going to be three, and it'll be different. Well, the concept of terrible twos is certainly a reality, but it doesn't work exactly like that. You've got to be observing your own child to understand his development. And what we see happening is people are shocked by the way their family members are developing. I keep hearing people saying, I thought I knew so-and-so, and it turns out I didn't.
Well, that goes back to your...
you got it, living with strangers.
To your living with strangers concept.
Part of the question is, when was the last time you sat down and had a quiet conversation with so-and-so without the television on?
Mary, when you took a trip to Georgia and taught a class at Spelman College, which I believe formed the basis for much of what is in your book, your class had a wide age variance of women as students. And I'd like you to tell us about that and what was in that class that drew you to writing Full Circles and Overlapping Lives.
Well, you know, I have been teaching on the life cycle and on autobiographies and life histories for about 10 years. But when I went to Spelman, a liberal arts college, I would have had a class. I was there as a guest for one semester. I would have had a class of all traditional undergraduates, young women under 20, if I hadn't balked and said, if I'm going to teach about women's lives, I need a mixture of ages. So I brought in a group of older women connected with the college, and the result was that they fell into two groups rather than being kind of scattered across the spectrum. And that really stimulated me to think about how is it different today to be 20 from what it used to be, and how is it different today to be 50 from what it used to be. Now, the other element here, Spelman College is a traditionally black college, which means that the older women in the group had all grown up before the civil rights movement, and in legally segregated Deep South. And the young women had all grown up in society as we know it today, which still has deep problems around the issue of race, but nothing like before the 60s. So that I could be thinking, I'm white, I could be thinking simultaneously about the problems of communication between racial and cultural groups and about the issues of communication between different generational groups. And that I found a very interesting process, and the women in the class found it an interesting process because they were constantly discovering what they didn't know about each other, the world in which the others live.
Can you share with us some of your thoughts and some of the things that they didn't know about how the others lived?
Well, I'll give you an example. Sometimes, because I was the same age as the elders, I felt that they and I were closer to each other in our experience than they were to the younger women. For instance, we read the life story of a woman, some of you have seen the movie, but I recommend the book, Layli Hayslip's When Heaven and Earth Changed Places, a Vietnamese woman. Well, the young women in the class were too young to remember the Vietnam War, and yet it hadn't yet gotten into most of their history classes. And the interesting thing is, they assumed that the African American community would have been opposed to the war. Now, I don't know how old you are, but I can tell you I remember that, on the whole, most of the African American community was sympathetic with the war, except for a few intellectuals. But working class people, white or black, supported the war. And
but that was true regardless of racial background.
That's right. But now the young people assume it would have been different. The young people assume that the black community would have seen it as a racist war. And that's a change, looking at the other side of the planet and thinking in these terms. So there was this moment of talking to each other and discovering that this change had taken place and been taken for granted. And indeed, many of Dr. King's followers were very disillusioned when he spoke out against the Vietnam War.
I remember that very well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See, you do belong to my generation.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. The concept between immigrants in time is, I think, the source of what you're saying between the 20-year-olds and the 50-year-olds.
Exactly.
And even the 3-year-olds who come yet in another generation. It seems like with the changes in industry and electronics, the generational gap is closer and closer together in years.
Well, you know, there's a kind of a cliche that there's a new generation every 20 years, and there's a tendency to give kind of snappy names to different generations, the silent generations, the me generation, Generation Xers, and so on. But in fact, as the rate of change accelerates, I think it's hard for students in college to understand what their younger brothers and sisters in high school are thinking and learning. So that's maybe a 5-year difference.
That's my point. In your young life, you lived with rather well-known parents, Margaret Mead and Gregory Bateson. I'm interested in how their influence, your mother's work in the South Pacific, her book Coming of Age in Samoa, and her thoughts. Of course, there may not be a lot for you to compare it to, but I'm curious as to how you have absorbed their points of view in analyzing society.
Oh, I think I've absorbed a great deal. My mother actually was brought up from her childhood to be sensitive to observing culture around her, and taking notes, not just when she went to foreign places, but taking notes and paying attention when I was a baby. She was a participant observer in family life. So that's a way of looking at the world as offering something that you need to pay attention to all the time. And my father, of course, was an immigrant. He grew up in England and came to the United States after he studied anthropology and lived in California. And he always looked at American culture, you know, with one eyebrow raised, sort of quizzically, as if saying, now, how did I get here?
How did he get here?
How did he get here? To California?
Well, to America.
He and my mother met in New Guinea and fell in love, and then they did some field work together in Bali and New Guinea and got married. And then eventually they split up and he moved to California. She lived in New York.
And that's where you grew up, in New York?
Yes, with visits to California.
Mary, is there a section of full circles and overlapping lives that you could read for us, please?
Sure. I thought it might be useful to read a bit about how the shape of lives has changed. We talk as if we'd added years on at the end, because that's where you add. But in fact, something much more pervasive has happened. Here we go. Anyone who has had the experience of building a new room onto a house knows from that experience that the result is much more complex and pervasive than simple addition. Adding a room can change the entire pattern of usage, where the family spends time, where things are stored, which doors and hallways are used, and often changes the system of relationships within the family as well. Not only is a building modified, but the meaning of home is modified. Adding a new member, even a pet, to a household has even greater effects on the pattern of life. The extra room, represented by extended life expectancy, is far more than a simple addition or extension. If there is a new stage in adult life, it is more like an atrium opened up in the center than like a wing tacked on, a space for new and airier lifestyles and freer kinds of relationships. Time has been discovered in midstream, a second adulthood, while youth and aging both have changed in shape.
Well, this whole concept of extended time has radically changed the economics of our culture. We have housing developments for senior citizens, exclusive residence for people over 55, communities like that.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that creates an age separation that sets up a block for the learning that you talk about that can occur in a home. If
absolutely. I mean, we are at risk of age segregation that could be as bad as racial segregation in terms of people forgetting how to communicate with each other. Generations not connecting. And I want to emphasize, Barry, that although the examples in this book are mainly women, that's because the changes in the life cycle have become obvious first in relation to women. But in fact, these changes are affecting men as well, and affecting the whole life cycle of men as well as of women.
I see that. I feel that.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I'd like to see a future in which men and women planned their resources and their priorities so that they could take time for a midlife assessment, maybe a sabbatical, go back to school for a while, think about what they want to do with the years ahead of them, because they have a lot more years ahead of them in most cases than most people have learned to think about.
And in some cases that most people have had behind them.
That's right.
Well, Mary Catherine Bateson, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious. And before we close, I'd like to ask you if you could tell us about an interesting book that you've read recently.
Well, you know, I read autobiographies and life histories constantly, and I thought I'd talk about a book called Ithaca, by a woman named Sarah Safian, who discovers, just after she's out of college, she's always known she's adopted, but she is found by her birth parents and goes through a process of having to rediscover who she is in terms of where she comes from. And I think that book is a particularly good parable for looking at the fact that none of us goes into adulthood with a finished identity. We're going to have to keep revising our sense of who we are. It's a fine book for anyone who's been affected by adoption, but it's also, I think, a very fine book just for ordinary Americans who have to go through the process of rediscovering themselves again and again. The title of the book, Ithaca, refers to a poem by Cavafy on Odysseus's return from his wandering. And the message of the poem is, it's not arriving that's important, it's the journey.
Well, Mary Catherine Bateson, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious.
Thank you.
Mary Catherine Bateson is the author of Full Circles and Overlapping Lives, Culture and Generation in Transition. The book that she recommends is Ithaca by Sarah Safian. This interview with Mary Catherine Bateson was recorded in April of 2000.
Over 400 Radio Curious programs may be found on our website, radiocurious.org. They're free as my gift to you. I hope you enjoy them. The email is curious@radiocurious.org. Christina Onnestad is our assistant producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.